Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined by the returning Matt Oper. How's it going, Matt?
Returning like a conquering hero. I expect a full tribute like this is ancient Rome. I don't need money, but give me some laurels. I just want some laurels for my neck and head. That's all I need.
It's being procured as we speak.
It's tough to find this time of year. That's a tough find.
That's one of the perks of podcasting, is it's easy to... people just send you things, apparently, if you have a successful podcast, which we do, right?
Totally. Totally. We're really ruthless at monetizing this.
That's why we have to thank our new sponsor, SeatGeek. Not really. But,
yeah, that would be nice. You can put in the code Bearcat. You'll get nothing off your next seat. I apologize.
It will just be like, oh, this wasn't an actual code. Sorry. But then, like, we'll just blame your capitalization or lack thereof to why you didn't get the discount. Because we did.
Totally got that. Not making this up at all.
Have you actually ever used SeatGeek?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I got decent seats for the Michigan game this year, which was... It was something. It was something.
Yeah, I went on a trip to St. Louis over the summer. Got, like, Cardinals tickets for, like, $8 a piece. So that was pretty nice.
It seems more like a basketball / baseball thing because... It capitalizes on the sheer volume of games to get good deals to the games that nobody wants to go to. Not so many of those in football.
Yeah, definitely, because especially it seems like on some. Like, I'm sure, like, with NFL, you could probably find some good deals for the bad teams. But college, it just gets, like, jacked up, like, as the game gets closer. So I looked at a few different ones, and, yeah, like, if anybody has, like, a premium seat, it's impossible to get. Like, you get, like, face value, pretty much. Instead of getting, like, a giant surcharge like you do on some of the other sites.
Yeah, but we're not here to talk about seat apps.
Yeah,
we'd like to... We got really sidetracked very early there.
How about this segue? Sitting on top of the American Conference are the Bearcats. 5-0, the only undefeated team in the league. And you haven't been on since early in the season, so we really don't know your thoughts on this team. Especially coming off such an interesting game against Central Florida. Game the Bearcats won by double digits when they scored 49 points. A really weird game where they looked terrible and then they looked okay. And the defense was good. But the offense was... it was something.
Yeah, the offense was a struggle the entire game. I mean, like, that's to be expected. That's just how Central Florida plays. But, I mean, all the calling cards in a negative sense from the last couple of years of UC basketball are they're still there. I mean, they don't play with enough tempo. They wait 10 seconds to get into their offense. The offense, for the most part, is one person standing at the top of the key, and maybe they'll do a little horns action. And everybody else is going to stand around while the three guys in the horns action do the horns action. I mean, I get it. Tackle fall is an immense problem to try and solve because, you know, as they like to tell everyone, he's 7'6". But there's a better way to approach playing Central Florida than playing the game, you know, with a tempo in the 50s. It's to make him run. You run him off the floor because... He's just not conditioned to do that for 30 minutes a night, which is what he's been playing. So, you know, they play at a super slow tempo. UC was more than content to match that tempo. And, you know, it was just a really frustrating game to watch. Jacob Evans, Gary Clark, they really bailed him out in the end. and they can rely on them to do that often. But, I mean, this is a year where, even though the record is outstanding, it's really starting to feel like all the other UC teams. And this was supposed to be the best of the bunch. This was supposed to be the best team in the Mick Cronin era. And they might be, but they seem to be heading for a first-round exit like every other team in the Mick Cronin era.
Yeah, that's my biggest concern with this team. I kind of wrote it up in the I did like a little preview of UCF. Like, one of the things I was worried about is, like they would set, like, the blueprint of how to beat Cincinnati. Like, the blueprint for, like, the lesser teams. Not to say, like, the 12 seeds or 13 seeds or 11 seeds are, like, so much lesser, but I think you get what I'm saying. And I kind of think they did, because Xavier, like, beat Cincinnati with talent and shooting. Florida pretty much beat them with talent and some late-game heroics and unheroics by UC. But, like, a team with, like, average talent, like Central Florida, who does play, like, elite defense, like, Johnny Dawkins has really coached him up. But, like, if you, like, zone this team, and, like, just force them to, like, put the ball outside and, like, try to keep Gary Clark out of the paint, which, like, to Cincinnati's credit, to Gary Clark's credit, like, he was unstoppable in the second half. Like, 5 of 7 on twos. And, like, just pretty much took that game over. But, yeah, like, you really don't see it from, like, most of the other guys. Like, you have Washington, who kind of chips in. And the enigma that is Jacob Evans, who will give you a great 20 minutes and a weird 20 minutes. And, I don't know, or just, like, some weird segment where he doesn't play great. And this team is kind of easy to stop if you can corral one of the big guys inside, which I think is really disappointing because we're coming into this year, like you said, like everybody expected like the best offense of the Cronin era. Like everybody expected them to like be a little faster. Like they're playing, let's see, they're playing like a little, like two possessions faster than they did last season. And their offense is like about the same. Just like, oh, that was 2016. Their offense is like a little worse. It was 115 last year, and it's 111 this year. It's like that problem is like disappointing because I don't like it. You're in like the middle of January, like there's no real way to fix it.
No, because I mean the biggest problem for this team with this personnel group is, number one, they never get easy offense, ever. There is no interest whatsoever in getting a run out, in beating a team down the floor in transition. I mean, there were numerous possessions against UCF, one of the slowest teams in the country, because they have a lumbering 7'6" giant, so they have to play at an incredibly slow pace. But there were numerous possessions, first and second half, where all five UCF players would beat one UC player down the floor. Like, that should never happen. Like, there's just no interest in, there's no emphasis on getting easy looks in transition. I mean, like, the best offense that UC can run is to run down the floor, have Gary get early positioning, and then just take whoever ends up being matched up with him in those spots straight to the hole. Like, that kind of early offense is unstoppable, especially when Gary gets the ball and makes a quick decision, which he generally does. But they're far too content to walk the ball off the floor. They're far too content to waste 10 seconds off the shot clock before even one pass is attempted. They really don't have an offense to speak of. They have three sets that they like to run. They run the little horns. They try to get a few duck-ins here with their post players. I mean, if you're trying to duck in Kyle or Gary, that's fine. But if you are running your offense to get Trey Scott a post touch, like, that's just bad offense. Because what's he going to do in that situation? He's not a post up player. He doesn't play back to the basket. He has no, you know, no post game to speak of. He is, you know, that Justin Jackson pure energy run pick and roll kind of, like, he's a dive man. That's all he can do on offense. That's not to be harsh on the kid, but that's at this point in his career, that is the most that he can do, is to set a good pick, roll, get the ball, and make a quick decision whether that's to pass it out because he's an underrated passer, or go straight up to hoop, you know, on a pick and roll. Like, that's what he can do. But they work to get him three or four, you know, post touches on the block a game. And what comes of those? Not much. You know, and that's, yeah, I'm not trying to pick just on Trey Scott, but it's the most obvious example of this because there's just no attempt to get the guys the ball in the spots where they can do the most damage. I mean, Jerron Cumberland has really struggled this year. Why? Because he's playing with the starters now, so he doesn't control the tempo as much as he did when he was a reserve coming off the bench. And he's at his best when he can grab the rebound or be the first outlet and just run, because he's a freight train running down the tracks. If he gets even with somebody, you know, shoulder to shoulder with somebody, it's over. He's getting to the rim, and he's either going to, you know, make the shot and draw contact or just draw contact and get a foul. But, you know, like, there's all these things that this group of players does well. But with the exception of Kyle Washington, there's no effort to get them the ball in the spots where they're most effective. And that's the most frustrating thing with this team.
Yeah, that's something I agree with, like, 100%. I don't think you can watch this team and just watch how their offense works. Like, even take this, go back to the South Florida game, like, where, like, their offense, the first, what, like, 10 minutes are just so stagnant, like, the ball doesn't really move. And, like, that's something that's really kind of slowed down as the season's progressed, is, like, the ball, like, kind of sticks. I know, like, their assists, like, looked, like, pretty good, especially the second half against the UCF, where they, I think they had, like, 11 assists on, like, 13 baskets. But, like, the assist-to-turnover ratio has been, like, terrible all season long. And I think it just something where if, like, Washington gets the ball, it's going up. Like, if Gary gets the ball, it's, like, he's, like, turned, like, I'm going to say more selfish. Like, and that sounds like it's a bad thing. But it's a good thing because he's been, like, excellent offensively. And, like, he's the guy you want to have the ball. He's 32nd in the nation in offensive rating. 7th in the country or conference in offensive rating just in the conference play. It's like he's the guy like you want with the ball. But like you said, like Cumberland doesn't really get involved in the flow of the offense. That Jennifer doesn't. Like he's like pretty much a spot up shooter. Like it's interesting what's happened to Broom, because it really looked like at the beginning of the year he was going to be like your guy off the bench, like a Nick Williams or a flashback to Tony Bobbitt type of guy who was like, oh man, there's like somebody who's a microwave off the bench. Like here comes like a 10-point game or like a 15-point game. And like he just hasn't been bringing that at all against anybody like above average they've played. Like just like looking at the KenPom numbers, I guess like Florida and Xavier, he had big games. He was the only guy who really scored against Xavier. But, like, then it's just been downhill ever since he's gotten back from his injury, which is kind of interesting. But I don't know. It's like their bench, I think, is the biggest area of concern. So even with Broom back now, there's, like, zero scoring off the bench. You mentioned Scott and Brooks. Like, they're, like zeros offensively. Like, I know, like, their goal is to rebound and play defense. But, like, Trevor Moore is starting to get a little bit more run instead, like taking some of Jennifer's minutes. But it seems like can be a bit tentative at times, even though like he had a flashy game against Central Florida. Like they need somebody off the bench to step up and be a player. And it kind of looked like Keith Williams had a chance at that at the beginning of the year, but like he has ended up in the doghouse for like probably like defensive reasons and rebounding reasons, which it seems to happen to a lot of the young players on these teams.
Well, I mean, it could be just defensive or rebounding issues. My guess is it has something to do with his offensive rating being like 86, which is really dreadful and like the worst on the team by a mile. This team is in a definite need of a shakeup in terms of how they approach the game, because like And I see people just running down anyone who has anything negative to say about this team just because they look at the record, and the record is great, blah, 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 blah. They weren't really playing anybody. The two good teams that they have faced, they were not really, like, they choked away the one game, and they were not competitive against Xavier at all. And you can say that Xavier's overrated. They probably are. Their numbers aren't great, especially mostly because their defense is atrocious. But, you know, this program and this team is at the point where the regular season is irrelevant. It really is. There are not enough good team, you know, not enough good teams in this league to push them. Nobody who can really challenge them other than Wichita State when they, you know, when they want to play, you know, this kind of caveman basketball, nobody can get them out of it. They can bludgeon any team in this conference to death. Right? That's their calling card. That's what they've done forever. That's why every year Mick says that they're going to play faster, and every year they get to conference play and they're averaging 60 possessions again. Like, this happens every single year. The league is slightly better. I think the middle class is better than it was a year ago, but it's still nothing to write home about. And, you know, they're going to put up an outstanding record. They could very well win the conference title outright again, or at least share it. They should probably go to the American Conference final again. All these things should happen, but that's not how this team should be judged. This team needs to be judged on how they perform in March. And I'm seeing the same problems that I've seen for the last 4 or 5 years. Like, they just don't seem to have any ideas on offense. And whether that's purely a Mick thing or whether that's coming from the coaching staff or he's just getting players who don't have high basketball IQs, I don't know what it is. But, you know, we've seen the ceiling of this style year after year. And you get to the tournament and you lose in the first weekend. That's the ceiling. I've seen nothing that indicates that they are capable of playing in a different way. I've seen nothing that indicates that they can play a different style. And that's kind of what you need to make a run in March. I mean, because playing the way that they played, you know, so far this year, it just, your margin for error is zero. Because you need to get the right matchups for this style to succeed and make a deep run in March. Not saying it can't happen, it can, but historically, with the luck the Bearcats have had, they're not going to get a good draw. I mean, when was the last time they had a favorable draw past the first weekend? It's been a very long time.
It would have to be whenever they made the Sweet 16.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the only time I can think of. It just, it reduces the outcomes of this team because, you know, they're so easy to play against. They're so easy to prepare for. And it's not that other teams can prepare for the physicality. You know, that is, there's something to be said for that. But you don't have to work to guard UC. Like, you really don't. You know, if you watch a set, you'll see the main action and everybody else standing around. And if they're not part of the main action, they're literally jogging. Nobody makes a hard cut away from the ball. Nobody makes a hard screen away from the ball. Nobody moves away from the ball. It's just kind of this stagnant offense because they exert so much energy on defense that they use offensive possessions to rest. That's my going theory, and that's been my going theory for a couple years now. They just play too... They overextend themselves on defense to the point where they can't run an offense because nobody has the energy to completely go through it. Like, the only exception to this is Jacob Evans, who just never gets tired. Everybody else looks slow and sluggish in the second half. I mean, it just kind of is what it is.
That's actually an interesting theory. I've never really thought of that about that. It's like, unlike Virginia, like, they play a lot more... like, a lot more physical than, like, some of the other, like, top defenses. Like, just thinking of, like, Virginia and, like, a Villanova who's always highly rated defensively. Still seems, at least for Virginia, they play the pack line, obviously. Like, Villanova seems to throw out, like, a lot of zone. Or at least, if when they play man, they it's like funnel to like whoever their shot blocker is. So their guards like always pretty much get out in transition. So that is kind of interesting to think about. Like just looking at the other, like some of the other like top defensive teams. There's like Texas Tech, who's kind of like Cincinnati with a kind of maybe a little bit of better players, depending on what you think of their roster. Purdue, who's like been pretty elite, but it seems like they just do the same thing where they just funnel to their gigantic shot blockers. Same with Texas, who has Bamba, and like then like Miami has like a bunch of like pros. That's like, and West Virginia presses everybody, and like in Texas A&M has the same thing with the shot blockers where they funnel everything into their big guys. That is kind of interesting to think about, at least in that sense. So I do wonder if like that has to do with sometimes with like how they execute in crunch time.
I think it has a lot to do with it because that's when you need your conditioning to show up, right? It is in those last 5 minutes. And it never, ever seems like this team is peaking in that last 5 minutes. Now, individual players, that's a different story. Like, Gary always seems to play his best in the last 5 minutes. Jacob Evans, as previously noted, is a stamina freak and just can play 40 minutes perfectly fine and be just, you know, he'll be fine regardless. But, you know, Kyle Washington, you really need to regulate his minutes. Kane Broome, Justin Jennifer, you really need to regulate their minutes. Trey Scott could probably play more minutes than he does in terms of actually handling the load, but if you're playing him 25 minutes a game, you're giving a shorthand to an already shorthanded offense. I hate being so fatalistic, but it just seems like we've seen this movie before. And the goal for this program is to win national championships. Mika said so himself. Like that is his express goal. That's what he wants to do. Okay? So you got a top five defense in the country. Fantastic. That's great. That'll help. There's a lot of pedigree for teams with that kind of defense making deep runs in the tournament. And you're barely top 60 in offense. There's no pedigree there. Like, there is not a long history of teams with this profile making those kind of runs. Just isn't. And I'm not even talking about winning the damn thing. I'm talking about just getting to the Final Four. You know, you got to go back a long way, probably to the VCU, you know, Shaka Smart's first VCU run, to find a team that was that bad at offense making a Final Four. It just doesn't happen. Because eventually you're going to have to get to a point where the defense isn't quite as good, and you're going to have to make shots. Who on this team is making shots? I trust Jacob Evans. That's about it.
Yeah, that leads into something you mentioned earlier. You didn't really mention it per se, but like it seems like offensively, like they've become a lot more easier to guard. And it kind of seems like sometimes they end up playing like almost 4-on-5. Because like when, especially when Jennifer's in there, and like not to pick on Jennifer, but like he's clearly like just like the guy who takes a back seat compared to everybody else. Like his possessions are almost the same as last year. His shots percentage is a little bit up, mainly because like he like shot the ball a ton early in the season. Like he did, like have like an okay game against like Temple, but like it's like he's like pretty much just jacks threes. So if like you like play a zone, like he's gonna kick out of it, unless like he gets the ball off a rebound. And I really don't know like about Broome. It seems like he's been more assist heavy since he's come back, which I guess is good. But at the same time, like, they need somebody else in crunch time because I don't know what you do if, like, Gary gets in foul trouble, which, like, he doesn't really do. Or, like Evans is having a tough game. Like, he's going to shoot the ball no matter what. So I guess he doesn't matter. But it would, like, help if you had some sort of other option. Like, if they do play somebody like a Texas team or, I don't know, it's like somebody who profiles like an 11 or 12 or 10 seed. It's like, it's going to be really tough when, like, they have talent too. Like, you can't just bully some of these other teams like they do in league play.
No, and it's like, it's not that as individuals, these guys can't make plays. You know, Jerron Cumberland can make plays. Like, he's had an off year. Let's just call it what it is. He hasn't shot the ball particularly well. I mean, his three-point shooting is actually about the same as it was last year, but he is much less effective inside, you know, in two-point land than he was last year. Last year, he was unbelievable at finishing at the hoop. I think he was almost near 70% at shots at the rim. This year, he's in the 50s. Yeah. Kyle Washington, good offensive player, but like, the problem with this team is they are so much less than the sum of their parts that it's bordering on coaching malpractice, right? Because they have guys who are individually very talented, but there is no effort whatsoever to get these guys the ball in a position where they can do something with it, right? Like, Kyle Washington gets a lot of posts up where Gary Clark is standing on the baseline because, for whatever reason, like, I get it that they're more effective, you know, as a duo on and off the floor, but the spacing fucking sucks. It's terrible. You know, when you get against well-coached teams, when Kyle gets the ball on the post, they're going to wait for him to dribble, and they're going to double the fuck out of him every single time. You see some of it in the American, but the teams aren't that good, so he can just power his way over these guys and get buckets. In the tournament, that's not going to be a bucket. That's going to be a turnover, right? And there's just the lack of willingness to try different stuff to get these guys opportunities in spots where they can do something with the ball it's really frustrating because, you know, as the old, you know, saying goes, to a man with a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. Well, Mick's hammer is playing this caveman basketball. It's his favorite thing. He doesn't – every year he pays lip service to playing with more pace, playing with a little bit more offense, playing with a little bit more variability, which you need to have to make a run in the tournament, which is how ultimately he is judged. Like, I'm not advocating for, you know, firing Mick. I never will. Yeah, he is 25 wins every year. That's nothing to sneeze at. He gets in the tournament every year. That's nothing to sneeze at. But it's getting to the point where he needs to start shaking things up with his coaching staff because there's just no ideas anymore. Like, they're doing the same shit they've been doing for 5 years. The players don't really change, but the offense is the exact same thing it was. It's like a plug-and-play system where, oh, you're number one? Okay, this is what you do as a number one. Oh, you're a four? Okay, cool. Trey Scott, you're a four. You're going to get post-ups. You're not good at it? I don't care. That's what you're getting. And that part of it is so incredibly frustrating because this team is capable of so much more than they've shown this year. Like, there is no reason for this team to be hovering in the lower 50s, damn near 60s in offensive efficiency. It should not happen. But that's where we're at because they're just – they become so stagnant and so easy to guard. And people, especially in the league, they're prepared. They know exactly what's coming. You know, like, everybody knows that you can bait Mick into these kind of rock fight games because he, for whatever reason, will just allow it to devolve to that. He used to start the right rock fights. Now he just is the second person involved, right? That's the biggest difference. You know, he won't throw the first stone anymore, but if somebody throws a stone at him, he'll pick up a big boulder and chuck it at their head.
It's like a pretty good analogy. I know it sounds hard, like we're being like extremely harsh on this team, but I think we're both in agreement where, like, the regular season isn't the goal. The goal is to make a run in the NCAA tournament. Especially with, like, the schedule coming up, like, where you don't play pretty much anyone until, like, you go to Moody in, like, a month. So that gets, like, really tough to kind of get a gauge on how great this team is. Like, I know, like, their profile looks, like, decent, but you do have to answer the question, like, of how they actually beat in a tournament team? Like, who's the best team that they beat? Is it UCLA, who's like 13-6, and like just lost to Oregon State the other day? Like, or is it SMU, who like just looks like an NIT team, even though they did win at Wichita? Like, so the expectations, like, we can't like just be like, oh, well, let's like win the regular season and be like a 5 seed again. But I think you have to like start aiming higher, especially since like it's team's probably going to drop off without Gary Clark next year and Kyle Washington and maybe Jacob Evans, like if he wants to turn pro. This is like, this could really be like the end of an era with this, like this Bearcats team. So it could be like, it's important for them to like start cashing in. And to go back on something you said about Cumberland, I looked up the numbers. Last season, at the rim, he was 81%, like nearly 82%. And this season, he's at 57.4%, which is not great. Like a giant drop-off. Like just by comparison, he's shooting about the same as Justin Jennifer. So, yeah, that's not really ideal.
Yeah, like, I really think that Mick needs to start tinkering with the rotation because, you know, like, the fit with Kyle and Gary together is just clunky. It just is. All they do is get in each other's way. And it's to the point where I would love to see a 4-round-1 lineup with Gary as your center, quote unquote, just to see a little bit more movement of people, of the ball. I mean, Kyle Washington is a world-class ball stopper. He really is. Like, even Caron Butler thinks he should pass the ball a little bit more. But he is so wedded to this idea that he has to play two posts at all times. And, you know, that's probably, I mean, I would love to see five-man lineups with the on-offs with Kyle and Gary. But your best lineups have Gary in all of them, every last one of them. Gary and four of the wings is probably a better lineup than Gary and Kyle together with anybody else.
Especially, like, you know what games Kyle Washington is going to be great. Like, you can just see the matchup on paper. Like, if it's a team like South Florida, like, oh, he's going to bully whoever they have. It's going to be an easy day. Like, same with Temple. Like, Temple had no, like, Echenoya was, I think he was guarding, what, Clark? So, like, the whoever they had on Washington was, like, easy. But, like, a team, like, that's, like, tall and athletic. Like, I know he got in foul trouble against Memphis. Like, Memphis, like, he barely played. Xavier ran him off the floor. Like, and, like, we've seen, like, a lot of the, like, almost, like, the upper echelon teams that have good bigs try to do that. Like, they, like, Washington, like, did have a monster game at UCLA. Like, probably his best game of the season. Like, he just ate their big guys up. But then, like, you have a game like Florida where, like, he really struggles to get it going. And like you said, like, he's always been, like, a ball stopper. But this year it's been more dramatic. Like, do you want to guess his assist rate?
Three percent.
Yeah, it is. It's 3.1%. Like, in conference play, five games, it's 2. Against the good teams they've played, like the tier A and B teams on KenPom, it's 3. It's like, yeah. Like, he's going up with it, like, no matter what. Or he's turning it over. Which his turnover rate has been, it's been a little down in league play, but it's still like 14%.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, like you said, you can tell when these games are coming, where Kyle is just going to be, he's just going to be a black hole. And, like, I'm not saying don't play Kyle. That's not a smart way to go. Like, there is a role for Kyle. There is a spot on this team. You know what the spot is? It's coming off the bench, leading the reserves, playing with Trey Scott, playing with, you know, I would rather see Nysir Brooks in the starting lineup than Scott or Brooks in the starting lineup for Kyle Washington at this point, because the offense of the second unit is dreadful. There is no one to go to. Like, there is no identity. Like I said, they're running post-up plays for Trey Scott on a regular. Why? What's he going to do with the ball there? Statistically, miss the shot or turn it over. That's what he's going to do. If you put Kyle with that second unit, you're going to get offense. You're going to be able to rest your starters more often. The second unit is already kind of a defensive black hole anyways, so it's not making it that much worse having Kyle there. Because Kyle is a guy who has obvious strengths and obvious weaknesses. Like, his strength is he can go through contact. If you give him single coverage, the ball's going up, and more likely than not, it's going in. But he has equally obvious weaknesses. Good teams run him off the floor. Like, he never had an impact in either of the Xavier games that he's played because they attack him remorselessly with the pick and roll. Because if you put him in space, he is lost. He is not an effective defender there. And that's, if you're going to have that problem with your team, you want to have it with the second team. I mean, like, that's just kind of is what it is. And Gary is just a better player. He makes good plays. He doesn't stop the ball. He has been more assertive this year, but he still is the player that we've come to know and love. You know, the unselfish guy who makes the right play. And, like, I just want to see more Gary. And, like, it's not a shot against Kyle. There are things that he can do to help this team, but they need to try different things with this group of players so that they can be ready for March. But the catch-22 of that is they win every single freaking game, so there's no reason to change it. Even though they haven't had a good road start in a month. Like, they played like shit against Temple in the first half. They played they played terribly against USF and UCF in the first half on the road. They're not going to be able to survive these bad starts against the better teams on the schedule when they go on the road. And that's the biggest concern, but because they're winning these games, it's going completely unnoticed. And there's no urgency whatsoever from Nick to change, I think.
Yeah, because you don't play that NCAA tournament at home, like, unfortunately for this team. It's like the only time they looked really great on the road was against UCLA. Even then, that was, like, at the end of the first half, where they just put a monster run on, and that was it. Like, that was pretty much the rest of the game, even. That one, like, last 10 minutes of the first half, that 20-5 Cincinnati. Like, that was the margin of victory. It was, like, 15 points. It's, like, really, like, you can say that about almost every game, like, they've played on the road this season, outside of that one, like, fantastic segment, which is probably the best segment they've played, like, the entire season, like, hands down.
Oh, yeah, that's not even a question. And you know who was not on the floor for that? Kyle, he was in foul trouble. If I'm remembering that game correctly, I'm pretty sure Kyle picked up two early fouls and didn't play the rest of the first half.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think he did because they started bombing threes with them on the bench. It seems like the only thing that has changed with the offense is Jacob Evans is taking on, like, more of, like, the Kilpatrick role, where he's, like, the de facto point guard who plays, like, the entire game. Like, given what we've, like, seen from, like, Jennifer and Broom, I guess it's not really the case with Broom, since, like, he kind of runs the show more when he's in the game. At least he did against UCF. But, like, do you think they're getting, like, what they really could out of Jennifer with him being off the ball?
No, but I think for this offense to be at peak, like, it's amazing how good Jacob Evans has gotten with his ball handling to the point where he's making plays going right and left off the dribble. In the first couple of years, it's not that he couldn't dribble. Like SK couldn't dribble early. Like not at all. You know, Jacob never had that problem, but his biggest problem was he couldn't build combos and moves. Like, he had a crossover, he had a step back, but he couldn't do a crossover into a step back, right? Now it's kind of all coming together. He can make plays going left or right off the dribble. Like, he has become the closer of this team. And I, if anything, I would like to see them lean into that even more and start running lineups where it's a spread pick and roll with Gary and Jacob, and you just put shooters around them. And I guess that's what they think they're doing with Jennifer, but he's not really been a super effective three-point shooter this year. I don't have his percentages right in front of me, but it doesn't feel like he's hit more than like 35% of his shots. But the problem with that is, like, that was the go-to offense when SK was a senior because it was SK and Justin Jackson and nobody else, right? Like, there was nobody else on that team other than a young Troy. This team has more than that. So you're really sidelining not just Justin Jennifer, who is an effective point guard. He really is. Like, I know people love to shit on him because it's I don't know why, but he's been effective doing what he does. His assist rate is great. His turnovers are very, very low, unlike the other point guard on the team. When he's on the floor, the ball moves. They generally get good shots. Like, there's a lot to like about Justin Jennifer, but he's not in a super effective spot-up three-point shooter. That just is what it is. So, he has a role, but it's like it seems like for everybody to have their most effective role, everyone else needs to not do what they do well. So it's kind of a your turn, my turn sort of thing, with the noted exception of Gary Clark, who just makes everything better. Gary Clark's like an onion. Like, you add it to that dish, it'll be better. Doesn't matter what you're even making.
Just probably just infuriated everybody who hates onions but loves Gary Clark.
How can you hate onions? They make everything better.
Justin Jennifer, on the year, 37% from three. In the league, 3 of 11. And against the tier A and B teams, like the top teams on KenPom, 2 of 14 from three. So he's kind of like, he has cooled off as the competition's gotten better. Like, getting those same looks against, like, SMU that he got against, like, Richmond or Coppin State. Just to be expected. And, like, this is really his first year playing, like, a ton of minutes.
So, yeah.
But, like, the thing that kind of stands out with him and Broom is that they do get picked on. And, like, I think that's becoming a bit of a bigger issue. Because you can kind of play Jennifer off the court. And Central Florida, like, pretty much did that in the first half. Like, Jennifer played 3 first half minutes. Because, like, they just ran at him every single time, and, like, they forced Mick to pull him.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is a new thing for a Mick Cronin team, is having, like, 3 guys you can play off the court. Because they're just not... It's not that they don't want to be good defenders, it's just that they're not. And they're not going to be. Like, you can run Kyle off the floor. You can run Kane Broom off the floor. And Justin Jennifer, too, because he's tiny. Like, you know, when they were playing SMU, he was matched up against Shake Milton. There is almost a foot height difference between Shake Milton and Justin Jennifer. So, like, it teams with a big ball handler, they can do that to really exploit him and kind of run him off the floor. Now, it should be said that Shake Milton actually didn't have that good of a game against the Bearcats. With Justin Jennifer guarding him. It's like they were trying to, and maybe I should give Mick credit for this, maybe he was trying to bait people into attacking a mismatch in a way that they normally wouldn't. Maybe that was the master plan. I don't know. But it's a good team. It's a very good team. But my God, are they frustrating. Like, they're so frustrating to watch.
And we saw in the Florida game, at least at the end, before Mick started going offense-defense, Chizoa just, like, went right after Broom, like, for one of the big baskets at the end of the game. It's like that. It's something, like, you do have to worry about if, like, they get matched up against a team with, like, a great point guard. Like, somebody who is, like, big and physical like he is. Even though he's not really big, but he's really physical. And, like, he, like, went right at Broom. Like, that's something that kind of makes me wonder, like, what they're going to do in March if, like, teams start going ISO against them. Like, I know, like, UC likes to help, but that does open up, like, the weak side threes.
Yeah, well, what you can do then is go with a supersize lineup and put Jacob Evans at point guard, run with Cumberland and one of either Trevor Moore or Keith Williams. I mean, that's the counter to that counter. Like, if you just overwhelm people with size, the problem with that is if you do go with Keith Williams, he has been a dreadful offensive player this year. I mean, there's no sugarcoating it. He's the only person with a below-average offensive rating on the team. The only one. So Semi has a better offensive rating by a lot. And I'm not even sure he can shoot the ball.
Yeah, it's been a rough adjustment for Keith Williams, to say the least. Like, going bigger picture, has anything really stood out to you in the league? Like, it looks like there's, like, a nice, like, little top tier of teams with, like, Wichita State. And I guess we're going to still count Houston. Like, SMU was really struggled, like, 3-3 in the league, but they did get a big win. Like, Houston, even then, they just lost to Lane on the road, who's also 3-3. They look kind of decent. Like, they've definitely improved over last year's Tulane team.
But, yeah, I mean, like, the league has a middle class this year, which is nice and different, because for the most part, for almost the entire history of the league, it's been a top tier and a bottom tier and nobody floating in between. So having, you know, 3-4 solid, reputable programs in the middle is kind of a new thing. I kind of like it. Unfortunately, East Carolina and South Florida are still in the league, so... Yeah. Still got those, plus 300 wins. Those are what you need to build a resume.
East Carolina has 2 conference wins. Of course, they both come against South Florida, who is not going to win a single game in the league. They're really embarrassing. Like, that program is... Brian Gregory's got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, it's not looking good for South Florida. Like, they don't have, I don't know what it is, but they just don't have, they don't have the culture, they don't have the resources, they don't have the mentality to be a competitive basketball school in this league. I mean, it's just less than a decade ago they were in the tournament and almost made it. Didn't they make a Sweet 16 run?
No, I think they just made it to the
second round.
But they won the play-in game.
And yeah.
Lost to Upstart Ohio in the Sweet 16. Or in the round of 32.
Yeah, the win that got what's his name? The job at Illinois that he subsequently lost.
Oh,
Grochi, something like that? Gucci? Gucci. It's totally Gucci.
Now.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the biggest surprise has been the middle of the league and how much better they are this year than last. Wichita State has been as advertised. They don't really. It'll be interesting to see how they react to not having a margin for error, because they really don't have one. In the Valley, they had plenty of margin for error. But now it's kind of rough.
Except they probably haven't had too many games like the back-to-back where they like almost blow the game to Tulane. Or not Tulane, but to Tulsa, which was a really like crazy atmosphere. I don't know if you watched that one. Like half Wichita fans, half Tulsa fans. Like the everybody is going like nuts. Like then like they just come out so flat against SMU and like just weren't able to come back like a great performance by Shake Milton. But I don't know, like I've kind of been a little bit down on them.
Yeah, like the injuries haven't really helped. They are healthy now, so it'll be interesting to see how they round into shape as the season progresses. But you know, they really don't. They're up against it. Like, they have a lot of tough games left, and I believe they're projected to lose 3 more games, according to KenPom's numbers. Yeah, they're projected to lose to UC, SMU, and again to UC at this point. And at this point, like, even one of those losses probably does the league for them. Because I don't think... I mean, UC is going to get to, like, 22-2 before that tough four-game stretch where they have UCF, SMU, Houston, and then Wichita. Like, that's kind of the money shot for UC, is back there starting on February 6th. But they should roll through these next 5 games. Like, not even a question.
Do either of the name brands or road games worry you at all? Against Memphis and UConn?
No. UConn hates life. Everybody there is miserable. That doesn't worry me. And they have perhaps the worst coach in the league.
Actually, you should kind of think that that's fair. I don't know, but you can debate Brian Gregory. Well, East Carolina doesn't really have a coach, so they don't count. Their coach quit.
East Carolina doesn't have a coach. But, I mean, goddamn, what a fall from grace for Kevin Ollie. Like, he won a national championship. He might be the worst national championship winning coach ever.
That's actually,
I mean, they won a national championship because Bo and Shabazz were just like, you're not calling the offense anymore. And this actually happened. They flat out told him, we're not doing what you tell us to do anymore. We're running the show. And they did. To a national championship.
Like, one of the all-time great runs by, like, Shabazz Napier. Let's play this game. Would you take Kevin Ollie over the coaches? Let's see. You wouldn't take him over Mick or Greg Marshall. We'll just eliminate those. Would you take him over Kelvin Sampson?
No.
Tubby?
I mean, there is a possibility that Kevin Ollie could get good. Whereas Tubby is in Tommy Tuberville mode, just cashing that check.
They have looked more feisty as of late. Well, of course, they have played like 3 or 4 at home.
Like, they've had 3 or 4 at home and against the dregs of the league, so that helps.
Would you take him over Jankovic?
God, no.
Would you take him over Johnny Dawkins?
No.
Dunleavy?
No. Not even a question. I mean, Dunleavy's also in cash that check mode, but he knows way more about basketball.
It looks like he's also in the, like, drop that bag mode. With, like, the recruiting class they have coming in. They're actually, like, kind of good, which is, like, really startling for Tulane. Here's the one that I think is a good comparison. Him or Haith?
I mean, I will say that I've always liked Frank Haith coach teams. Like, I really liked his Missouri teams and the way they played. And I don't know if that's him so much as the Pressey brothers. Because as a short gentleman myself, I'm a big fan of those kind of guys. So yeah, I'll take Haith, and that's a sentimental pick. That might not be wholly with my head.
And you probably want to take him over Fran.
God, no.
That only leaves Brian Gregory.
I'd probably take him over Gregory.
Come on, so you have to go, like, that far down the line. Brian Gregory, only 2 NCAA tournaments. It's kind of surprising. I thought he had been to at least, like, 3 or 4.
Georgia Tech was not good for a very long time.
I even thought he was, like, better at Dayton. Did, like, they make a deep run or something? How did he get that Georgia Tech job? No, they beat West
Virginia. I don't remember.
They beat West Virginia one year. That's probably how. No, but even then, like, two more years at Dayton where, like, they didn't have, like, amazing records. Which, I don't know. That's kind of weird. He must have a great agent. But Georgia Tech has shown, like, a propensity to hire coaches, like, 2 years after they have, like, great years, like Josh Pastner.
Yeah. I mean, Georgia Tech's a weird basketball program. Like, they got some, like, absolutely iconic guys. They had Starberry. They had Kenny Anderson. For about a decade, if you were a good New York City point guard and weren't recruited by the Big East, you went to Georgia Tech, of all places. But they've never really had any success. It's like they've been memorable but bad.
That's really true. That's like, oh, is Georgia Tech decent this year? It's like, maybe. Like, they're like, oh, they have, like, a great player. Like, what they had, like, Derek Favors. And, like, then that team was really terrible because, like, they didn't have anybody who could get the ball to Derek Favors.
Yeah. I mean, like, they had that golden run in the early 2000s. Where they made deep, deep runs. But other than that, it's just... Wow, they actually have more Final Fours than I thought. And by more, I mean two.
Well, who can forget their, like, one crazy run to the title game with the tall guy?
Very descriptive.
Luke Censher. I looked it up.
I know, I'm on Sports Reference, too.
That's good team. Jared Jack, Will Bynum, BJ Elder.
That's a good team. Like, I know some of these people.
Like, they never, like, did anything, like, interesting again. And now Paul Hewitt doesn't even coach. I guess.
Yeah, they have a weird history. They really do. They kind of have that, like, DePaul history. Where they had a run in a definite era, and then it just kind of been, meh, ever since. And, you know, Atlanta's one of the most talented areas in the country, year after year. Like, you can live pretty well just recruiting Atlanta. And they haven't lived very well.
It's almost like...
And they had Bosch.
Oh, yeah.
And fame, like, god damn, they've had some dudes.
I think they had, like, Kevon Shumpert went there, too, with the
Tigers.
And it's like, that's almost have the same problem, like, the DePaul has, where it's like, they're in a big city with, like, a ton of talent, and you're like, oh, why can't they just recruit the city and get all these good players to go there? But then they all go to, like, Kentucky or Duke or... Like North Carolina or Florida. Like nobody
Or anywhere but Georgia Tech.
Or even like Georgia. Nobody ever stays in state. Just like nobody from Chicago ever goes to DePaul.
Not since Mark Aguirre. And that's been a while.
Just seems so long ago. Because it was so long ago. Like how they were like, oh, Cincinnati and like DePaul, like clashing for the Conference USA title. But like all those players, like turned to pro, graduated. That was it for DePaul. Once the last Diener left, they were done with.
Yeah, but they got a brand new arena. It's gonna change everything. So they say.
And have Dave Leto back to make it even better. DePaul hasn't had one winning season since they had Semi Mejia, who was the crowning achievement of DePaul basketball. I think if we're talking about DePaul, we've kind of run the course with this podcast.
I think that might be accurate.
Do you have anything else you want to get to before we sign off for this edition?
This offense would be way better if they didn't turn the ball over all the freaking time.
Oh yeah, we should.
We haven't talked about that, but like, if they just get a fucking shot up, their offensive numbers would be fantastic because they get so many offensive rebounds and they get so many second chance points. But they are turning the ball over at an ungodly clip. Like honestly, that's the bigger problem with the offense. Not even like more so than the wacky lineups, the bad fits, the bad spacing, all that. The bigger problem right now is they just turn the fucking ball over all the time.
That's been one of the benefits of like the weekend schedule they've gone through lately, is that even like a team like UCF, like they don't force a ton of turnovers. Like they've been able to cut their percentage down some, but it's still at 17% in just league play when they've played Memphis, Temple, SMU, South Florida, and UCF. Like it's been like their Achilles heel all season. Like, and their free throw shooting is still atrocious. Like, they've been getting to the line a ton in league play, and they're shooting, like, 69%. It's like these things, like, I guess outside of, like, the Kentucky teams, like, went really deep. Like, teams normally don't go very far when they turn the ball over a ton and can't shoot free throws.
Yeah, as it turns out, those are generally bad things for offenses. Yeah, I still have hope for this team. I still think they can make a deep run. It's just, I would like them to, for once, maximize every opportunity on offense. That would be nice. Maybe they can do that against the shitty teams coming up because they got a lot of them. Okay, East Carolina, you got Temple, you got Memphis, you got UConn. I mean, like these are some opportunities.
Here's something Chris and I were talking about the last time we did the podcast. Do you think that UC will have an all-AAC player on their team this year? Or do you think that like the lack of like, a true superstar is going to continue to like make that really hard for them?
Gary Clark should be, Jacob Evans should be, I don't think they will be. Like, Gary Clark should be the player of the year, period. Nobody in the league is better. At both ends, he's finally become an aggressive offensive player, and because of that, he's completely transformed his game entirely, and like he's got a shot at an NBA future because of it. But he's still only shooting like six times a game. Seven times a game. He's still only averaging, like, what is it, 13?
Again, league play is averaging, I just looked at the conference lovely numbers, he's averaging 13.6 points a game. He does lead the league in reboundings with 9.4 a game.
Yeah, he's averaging almost a double-double. He should be a first-team player. He should be the player of the year. But for him to get that, UC has to win the league. It's the only way that'll happen. Like, if UC finishes second to Wichita State, he's not getting it, even though he is better than everybody on their team.
Cause it just seems like right now, like, Milton's going to be first team. And maybe the leader for player of the year, just because his stats are so good. He's averaging, like, 21 points a game in, like, just the league games. Jalen Adams, like, plays a ton of minutes and has good numbers. Like, their only good player. Like, he'll probably be back. Like, but Rob Gray has been doing the same stuff he always does. So, like, there are spots, but I guess it really depends on how things come down to the wire. Because you got to think, like, Shimei is going to make it. It's like, maybe you have a shot. I think he does have a pretty legit shot. But it may come down to him and Evans.
Yeah. Well, KenPom has him as the player of the year so far, for what that's worth.
And I think if
it came, I think he was right last year as well.
And if it comes down to somebody, like a competition between him, like, I don't know, like BJ Young. Like it's going to be, or BJ Tyson. It's going to be Gary Clark.
BJ Taylor. is the actual name.
I think he's Tyson. BJ Taylor was somebody else.
No.
BJ Taylor's
not really.
BJ Tyson's the guy in East Carolina. BJ Taylor's on Central Florida.
Yeah, no one from East Carolina is getting within a million miles of the Player of the Year. Or second team all conference.
He was first team all conference last year.
Yeah, and he's a bench warmer on KenPom. Just because he's only played two games.
That probably will hurt his standing. Okay. Now we talked about East Carolina's good players. So I guess we can wrap this up for real now.
Yeah. Bye, y'all.